Agavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Text 45. Prasada bimukam, shashvat, prasanna, vadanekshanam, sanasam, subravam, charu, kapolam, sura, sundaram. Prasada bimukam shashvat, prasanna vadanekshanam, sunasam subravam charu, kapolam surasundaram. Prasada bimukam shashvat, prasanna vadanekshanam, sunasam subravam charu, kapolam surasundaram. Prasada bimukam shashvat, prasanna vadanekshanam, sunasam subravam charu, kapolam surasundaram. Prasada abhimukham. Always prepared to offer causeless mercy. Shashvat. Always. Prasanna. Pleasing. Vadana. Mouth. Ikshanam. Vision. Sunasam. Very nicely constructed nose. Subravam. Very nicely decorated eyebrows. Charu. Beautiful. Kapolam. Forehead. Sura. The demigods. Sundaram. Good looking. Translation. The form of the Lord is described herein. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he's always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose, and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse clearly explains how one has to meditate on the form of the Lord. Impersonal meditation is a bogus invention of modern days. In none of the Vedic literatures is impersonal meditation recommended. In Bhagavad Gita, when meditation is recommended, the word matpara, which means pertaining to me, is used. Any Vishnu form pertains to Lord Krishna, because Lord Krishna is the original Vishnu form. Sometimes, someone tries to meditate upon the impersonal Brahman, which is described in Bhagavad Gita as avyakta, meaning unmanifested or impersonal. But it is recommended by the Lord himself that those who are attached to this impersonal feature of the Lord suffer a very troublesome task, because no one can concentrate on the impersonal feature. One has to concentrate on the form of the Lord, which is described here in connection with Dhruva Maharaj's meditation. As will be apparent from later descriptions, Dhruva Maharaj perfected this kind of meditation, and his yoga was successful. Translation: The form of the Lord is described herein. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he is always prepared to award benedictions to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose, and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. And we get to Mirandasyakyana Janashalaka, Chakra Minatamiana Tasmai, Sri Guru Venamaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam, Vanchakalpa Tarubias Chakripa Sindhu Vyavacha, Parijanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pavanajananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Sri Vasari Gora Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So again, Narada Muni is very nicely giving his instruction to Dhruva Maharaj. This time he's talking about how, when Dhruva comes to the point of being able to fix his mind, having gone through that process of pranayama, which we were discussing yesterday, so when he's come to the point of being freed from the disturbances of the mind, and he has his mind under control, and he can do with his mind as he wants, and is not being pushed by his mind to act according to the mind's dictations. So when he's come to that point of being able to direct his mind, then he should direct his mind in a certain way, and that is to the beautiful form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a wonderful form that, of course, it's difficult for those who are materially attached, or particularly those whose minds are still not controlled and still are prone to gravitate towards the material nature. It's hard for them to really appreciate so much the form of the Lord. But for those whose minds have become a little freed from the attractions of material life, then as they study this form of the Lord, contemplate the different beautiful features and characteristics of all the different parts of the Lord, right from his lotus feet, right from his lotus toes, even his toenails, right up to his head and the top of his head, his smiling face and the crown of his head. Everything is most exquisitely beautiful. So the person, the yogi, whose mind has become freed from the attractions of material life and who is able to actually focus his mind on the Lord, finds that the Lord, the Lord's form, is a reservoir of stunning, astonishing beauty. Incomparably so. Even, as this verse says, Sura Sundaram. Even better looking than all the demigods. Materialistic people here on this planet we're seeing every day, some people are more attractive, some are less attractive. Some, by the standards here, some are very attractive. At least by the standards here. But compared to the demigods, the most beautiful lady, the most handsome young man, compared to just an ordinary demigod, there's no comparison. They look, the local inhabitant looks completely like some sort of ugly duckling or something like that. Really, even a little odd. Deformed something like that, according compared to the demigods. And the beauty here, we know, it lasts a few years, through the teenage years, through the 20s, starts to pale generally in the 30s, in the 40s, gone, in the 50s, looking actually somewhat repulsive. Anyway, these are these material bodies, and we have to be aware that this is actually the case, and not think that, oh, I'm going to do something with this material body and enhance its beauty or give it beauty. No. But the demigods, oh, they're living for thousands of years, and their beauty is quite astonishing. But compared to the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even they look most unattractive, most ordinary, very, very uninteresting. Whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, when people see them, particularly when the devotees see them, then, oh, their minds are just totally captivated. Rukmini, when she was about to be married to Shishupal, she was riding on some... Anyway, she was passing through the town, just preparing for the wedding ceremony. And there were many young princes and very respectable and important young men around. And even though they knew that she was being married to someone else, still within their minds, they were entertaining some other ideas. But when they saw her, many of them fainted. Even some of them were sitting on their horses, and they just fell out completely, bang, on the ground. So, she's the goddess of fortune, and she's the consort of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and she is beautified by being in his association. Her beauty is enhanced. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the reservoir of all, of everything, including beauty. And as long as one has some type of devotional attitude, and as long as one's mind is not too much materially contaminated, when one sees the form of the Lord, then one's mind will become captivated. And increasingly so, more and more captivated. Sri Srinathai Gaura Hare Ki. Sri Srinathai Gaura Hare, hearing that we are offering some little glorification of their forms, they decided to give us the opportunity to actually realize or at least practice this. So the form of the Lord is like that. So beautiful. In fact, so beautiful that once one has at least got some idea, even some small idea, some small appreciation of how beautiful the Lord is, then one wonders, as Prabhupada is doing here, how can people be attracted to some other type of meditation? Like some impersonal meditation. How could people be attracted to that? Something which has no form, has no beautiful features, no beautiful shape, or no beautiful activities. Actually something which is essentially intangible. You can't really say what it is. Just some sort of state of spiritual existence. So this idea, of course, has become somewhat popular in recent days, and Prabhupada refers to that here. Although, if one studies the Vedic literature, one will not find that impersonal meditation is recommended. Even though the impersonal feature of the Lord is described, but as we're seeing here, meditation on that and becoming particularly involved with that is not recommended. But certainly there's so many recommendations that you meditate on the form of the Lord, you serve the Lord directly, you try to realize the Lord develop a relationship with the Lord. That is described elaborately. Actually, in some places, there are some references which sound like they're recommending a little bit that one meditate on in some impersonal way. But our acharyas have explained that these should really be understood as indirect glorifications of the Lord in his personal feature. Otherwise, by far, the glorification of the Lord's form and meditation on that, by far, that is emphasized. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna discusses this very point. In the beginning of the 12th chapter, Lord Krishna, Arjuna asks Lord Krishna that there are two types of transcendentalists. One type is attached to your personal form, and the other type is attached to your avyakta rupam. Avyakta. Your unmanifest feature. So Arjuna is asking Krishna that there are these two types of transcendentalists. So please tell me which is best. So Krishna replies, what is that? Maya Vesha Manoyema Nitya Yukta Rupasate Shadaya Parayopetas Teme Yuktata Mamadana, something like that. Don't know if any of you know that verse. Anyway, he says, Maya Vesha, my personal form. Nitya Yukta Upasate. Upasate means worships. Nitya Yukta, always engaged, constantly linked with me, through worshipping me in that personal form. Shradaya, with faith. Teme Yukta Tamomata, that in my opinion, this is the best. So this is Lord Krishna himself speaking personally in Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes when we read these verses, we wonder, how could people construe Bhagavad Gita in an impersonal way? How is it possible? Because here Krishna is saying, in plain Sanskrit, anyway, plain language. Anyway, Sanskrit, which can easily be translated by someone who knows Sanskrit, and one can see very clearly that the very question is coming up, which is better, impersonal or personal? And Krishna is very clearly giving his answer, that the personal approach, worshipping me with faith, always in my personal form, this is best. But somehow or other, some people, I don't know quite how they manage it, it must be quite a feat, but somehow they read Bhagavad Gita and they end up being quite convinced that impersonalism is the message of Bhagavad Gita. And if I've learnt the lesson of Bhagavad Gita, I should become an impersonalist. So, it doesn't make sense. Actually, the practice of the impersonalists is that first of all there's a basic assumption, and then they read it, study in terms of the basic assumption. Not that they read and then analyze what is being said and then come to their assumptions, but first there's an assumption and then they read, and they view everything in terms of the assumption, and if anything contradicts the assumption, then it's either sort of juggled around in some other way, or overlooked, or denied in some way put aside. So the initial assumption is that everything is Brahman, there is only Brahman, it's all one, it's all impersonal, like that. That is the initial assumption. So when they read, when they come across something which appears to agree, then they take this and they point out, oh yes, here, just see. Here's this important verse confirming. When they come across something which disagrees, then they don't talk about it. They just sort of eliminate it. So, unfortunate, but in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is making it very clear that of the two categories, those who worship him in his personal form are the best. And he goes on to say that for those people who worship him always in his personal form and engage in his transcendental loving service, Krishna says that for them, I am the swift deliverer from the path of birth and death. Swift deliverer. But then he talks about the impersonalists. He's already said that they are not the best. But now he explains why. This is all in the beginning of the 12th chapter. Klesho di katarastesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukam dehavabhya avapyate. So the very first word is klesha. You know what that means? Sanskrit lesson here. Huh? Trouble. Misery. Misery. Really, like a major trouble. Klesho di kataras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Those who are avyakta asakta. You know, there's one level in devotional service called asakti, which means attachment. So they are avyakta asakta chetasam. The mind is attached to the avyakta. So what is their position? Klesha, misery. Avyaktihi gatir dukam. What does dukam mean? Yes, misery again. Avyakta hi gatir dukam. They only reach that goal with much misery, much difficulty. Deha vabhya avapyate. Because it's very difficult. If you are deha within the body, it's very difficult to realize these things. So then he goes on to explain that such people who are attached to this unmanifest feature of mine, they, if they act in certain ways, if they become very detached and very knowledgeable and so on and so forth, then they may realize my impersonal feature after a long time of great difficulty. They may. Of course, they may not. But they may. After much klesha, much dukkha, and so on. Like that. They may. But the devotees, what is the position of the devotees? Krishna says, I'm the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So just see. Krishna is making a clear distinction. Even elsewhere, where is it? End of the, is it the 11th or 14th chapter? Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratisht aham. That Brahman, effulgence, is pratisht aham. It is based on me. So anyway, somehow these impersonalists, they begin with the assumption. First of all, they begin with the assumption, and that is unchallengeable in their minds. So anything which contradicts that cannot stand, one way or the other. Either they must argue it out of existence, or just eliminate it and not refer to it at all. But, actually, if one analyzes the Vedic literature, one finds that generally, as Prabhupada is saying here, generally meditation on the personal form of the Lord is recommended. And there are some references which are talking about Brahman realization, although they're not so frequent, but they're there. So actually the Gaudiya Vaishnava point of view is achintya bheda abheda tattva, that we are simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. So, the Vaishnavas, one can see that this conclusion is correct, because when you read Shastra, you find both types of statements. So this Vaishnava philosophy is taking into account both. But the personal feature is always stressed. So therefore the devotees know that my personal relationship with Krishna, that is the main thing actually. Even though qualitatively there may be oneness, but actually the main thing is I have a personal relationship with Krishna, and my business is to realize that. So, Narada Muni is instructing Dhruva Maharaj to perform this type of meditation in the context of his Ashtanga Yoga. Actually, this type of meditation is not so much part of Ashtanga Yoga. Actually, this is more part of Bhakti Yoga, really focusing in detail on the form of the Lord and all his features. In Ashtanga Yoga, they may have some idea that there is the Lord, that he has a form, but not like this. Not very clear description, given in a very devotional mood, that one is meant to meditate in a devotional mood. Not so much like that. But it's understood that after performing Ashtanga Yoga for many years, thousands of years, 40,000, 60,000 years, something like that, then one may realize the form. Only then. Even though within the mind there is some idea that I'm to realize a form, but actually what the form is and the clear conception of it only comes with realization. So sometimes though these Ashtanga Yogis, they realize this four-armed form of the Lord eventually after 60,000 years of meditation. Then, because the devotional spirit has not been there, then they may even conclude that, oh, I just realized me. There I am with four hands, holding a disc, lotus, conch and club, and nicely dressed, and with a blackish form, blackish blue form, and this is me. Oh, good. And then they fall down. Because that mood of devotion has not been there. But in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he is being instructed in Ashtanga Yoga, but we know also that it's being cleverly combined with some very potent elements of Bhakti Yoga. And this is one. That he from the outset, at least from the point at which he gains control of his mind, he should very much focus his mind on the beautiful form of the Lord in a spirit of devotional service. So if he does like this, what will the result be? He'll become a pure devotee. And he does. Actually, we know we are in the presence of the Lord, and we're always being reminded, seeing the deity form, that the goal of my activities is a person. Prabhupada explained that in every temple of ISKCON, the deity is the proprietor. Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan, and Lord Chaitanya is in Goloka Vrindavan also, in Mayapur Dham. But they expand themselves into certain specific forms and manifest in the different temples, which are like transcendental embassies of the spiritual world. By their own independent free will, they appear in whatever form they feel they want to. And then all the devotees who are in that temple, they should understand that the Lord has personally chosen to appear in this form in order to be worshipped by me. He's giving me the opportunity. He wants me to worship him in this particular form. So in this way the devotees can feel, they should feel and should understand that by the Lord's arrangement, I'm being engaged in devotional service, and my service is specifically being offered to the particular presiding deities. Not just Krishna, in a very general sense. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's true, but in this particular form, So therefore we should understand we have a personal relationship with the deities. They are the proprietors directly. They are our masters directly. Directly. This is why every day, Prabhupada encouraged that every day different announcements be made for the pleasure of the deities. Like every week, Prabhupada wanted every week that a report be made to the deities that the income was so much, expenditure was so much, this was done, that was done, so many activities were there. Because actually these things are being done for the deity, directly. This is why we read out our sankirtan scores every day, sometimes. And I mean, we should do every day. Because I know you're very humble devotees and don't want to appear sort of proud by or anything like that. But still, we should report our scores. Even if it's just 2 or 3 books or 5 or 10 books or something. So we may think, well, what's that? Not so much. Someone else may be doing 50 books or more. So what about my 5 books? It's not so much. But actually, this service is for the deity. And even though we can take it that the deity knows, of course he knows, but still as part of the interaction, personal exchange, then we should also announce to directly inform the Lord like that. So this is very nice. So we're all going out, or at least we're all engaging in our different services, and many of you going out distributing books, and you know that what is the particular nature of Nitai Gaur Hari, Nitai Sachi Sutta, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, their particular nature is that they are absorbed in the Sankirtan Yajna. So if one carries out one's duties of Sankirtan while being fixed in one's position, conscious of one's position, as the servants of Nitai, Shishi Nitai Gaur Hari, directly, personally like that, then one must get their mercy. How could it be otherwise? Because this is their business. They have chosen to appear. Not that we have ordered them, that because we are moving, you know, and you are dependent on us, therefore you are coming with us, like it or not. No. This is their choice, and they have brought us here. They have chosen us. Who, me? They chose me. No, the temple president sent me from Devanagari. I just happened to join in Johannesburg or something like that. No. They personally brought us here because they want us to render service to them. So we shouldn't think in another way that Krishna's everywhere and in this part of everywhere, meaning the altar, that he just happens to have manifested in that form. But actually he's everywhere just as much, so why should I worry more about how he's present there? No. This is the nature of the Bhagavan feature. Specific, appearing in specific places and interacting personally with the devotees. So the devotees learn how to relate with the Lord personally. Training period. So we should also try and meditate on the Lord. Think of the Lord. This is why deity worship is very nice, in that we are prone to become attached to forms. We are prone to become bodily attached. So if we worship the form of the Lord, then the propensity that we have to become attached to bodies, that will become reposed in the body of the Lord and will become purified. This is why deity worship is particularly recommended for householders. Because their male and female are at very close quarters, and the tendency to become bodily attached is encouraged by that close association. So therefore it's always recommended that householders worship deities, so that tendency can become purified. And everyone actually, Brahmachari, Brahmacharini, anyone, we all have a tendency to become bodily attached. So we should try to repose that in the body of the Lord, in the form of the Lord.
And this will purify us very much. So we should try and cultivate, appreciate the beautiful feet of the Lord. Try and remember. Can any of you, without looking, tell us what color outfit the deities are wearing today? Without taking a quick It's like that, yeah, combination. I guess red is the most prominent color. Oh, it's not. Orange. We're colorblind. Anyway, something like that. What do you call it? Pink. Hot, oh, hot girl. Oh, yes. Very nice. Very hot, yes. Very nice. So you can see the deities are dancing there so happily. Particularly Nittai Sachi Sutra looks like they're just going to run off the altar and just embrace their devotees. Anyway, we should try and remember them. During the day we can remember that I am the servant of the deity has brought me here. I have a personal relationship. I may not be very advanced, but still these things are true. So let me try and act very nicely, remembering my Lord, serving him wholeheartedly, like this. And then, as in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, Prabhupada says right at the end, Dhruva Maharaj perfected his meditation and his yoga was successful. So this is the perfection of meditation for us. And this is part of the process of bhakti. And if we do it all very nicely, then our yoga, bhakti yoga, will be successful. And we'll be very happy. So any comments or questions? You want to say something?
I heard you mention that the Supreme Court can be powerful.
Yeah.
So do they also, I mean, are the Supreme Court also subjected to uphold things or...
Yes. Yes. But not so much. Meaning, of course, death is there, but, you know, it's a very distant thing for them, very, very distant thing. But as far as sickness goes, yes, there, such things are there, but much, much less than here. Not only are their bodies more beautiful, much, many, many times more beautiful. Actually, we can't even really conceive of that beauty. So beautiful. But their bodies are also much stronger. Now our bodies, because our bodies are not so strong, therefore they're susceptible to disease. But their bodies are not susceptible to disease so much, and the living conditions are so much nicer. Here we have extremes. Summer it's quite warm, winter it's quite cold. And then from day to day it may change also. But there the conditions, living conditions, are not so extreme. So, you know, there's so many factors which are part of the very extraordinary and materially very wonderful nature of the heavenly planets, which make living there so much better in all respects, materially at least, in all respects. So old age is there, but they don't become, you know, like totally weakened by old age. You know, in many cases, they'll be very strong, but then suddenly they'll die when their time comes. They will be in old age, but still they'll be very, very strong, but then suddenly they'll just die. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Ready? Yes. Yes. The deity, the devotees, all the devotees actually, and particularly the spiritual master. Yes, to remember the spiritual master is the same actually. Because if you remember the spiritual master, then you're automatically going to remember Krishna. And vice versa. if one is nicely situated. When one thinks of Krishna, one will automatically think of the spiritual master.
So it's a question of faith.
Faith. Yeah. So you have to put the right things in your mind. Yes. This is why we have to hear a lot and associate with the devotees a lot, and that will our mind will become filled with Krishna consciousness, and the natural result of that will be that faith will develop. You hear the philosophy, it's very, you know, you understand it, you see how real it is, how practical it is, how convincing. You see how the devotees are nicely engaged in devotional service and how wonderful their lives are. You chant Hare Krishna yourself and you experience that it's very nice. So in these ways, faith comes, faith develops and becomes strong and stronger and stronger. In fact, one's position in devotional service can be understood in terms of the degree of one's faith. That a very neophyte devotee doesn't have much faith, but a very, very advanced devotee has completely unbreakable faith. Not exactly, in that our relationship with the Lord is already existing. But the relationship with the spiritual master may not have been already existing before one met him. But still it's understood, or it's sort of like transcendentally a little inconceivable, but the fact is there, that once the relationship is established with the spiritual master, it's considered eternal. Even though it may only have begun whenever, in relatively recent times. Just like a person, there's sadhana siddha and nitya siddha. Nitya siddha means someone who's eternally perfect. Sadhana siddha means someone who's become perfect through practice. But when the sadhana siddha becomes siddha, then the sadhana siddha can also be considered nitya siddha. Yeah. So it may be that one may actually never have met one's spiritual master until recently. But whereas one has had a relationship with Krishna since time immemorial. But still, when one meets the spiritual master and the relationship actually becomes strong and real, then the relationship is considered eternal. It's not considered any less eternal. In other words, it's not just a matter of playing with words. It's not considered any less eternal than the relationship with Krishna. Because and the basic reason is that on the spiritual platform, these concepts of time that we have, at least, the concepts of time that we have in material life, they don't apply. And that is somewhat inconceivable. Therefore, we don't go into the mechanics of these things too much, but we just make that point, that the relationship with the spiritual master is eternal. All right? Any other comment or question? Shri Bhagavad Gita.